To live in compassion, you must give up control. I selected that sermon topic some weeks ago. I've been observing some everyday exchanges between people, exchanges that somehow had gone wrong. These weren't big confrontations, they weren't arguments. They were mostly well-intentioned, but somehow misguided attempts to express compassion. Our theme for the month of May is compassion. And there's no shortage of talk about compassion. The author and religious scholar Karen Armstrong, I think back in 2008, was responsible for starting an international movement around a document called the Charter of Compassion. There's a branch of this movement here in Halifax, at Mount St. Vincent University, and I get emails on the topic of compassion, more emails than I have time to read. The opening words of the Charter of Compassion, which was a document developed by a number of religious and secular leaders from around the world, the opening words read as follows. The principle of compassion lies at the heart of all religious, ethical, and spiritual traditions, calling us always to treat all others as we wish to be treated ourselves. Compassion impels us to work tirelessly to alleviate the suffering of our fellow creatures, to dethrone ourselves from the center of the world and to put other there, and to honor the inviolable sanctity of every single human being, treating everybody, without exception, with absolute justice, equity, and respect. To dethrone ourselves from the center of the world and to put others there, that, I think, is the hard part of compassion. Karen Armstrong makes a clear distinction between compassion and sympathy. She said, compassion doesn't mean feeling sorry for people. It doesn't mean pity. It means putting yourself in the position of the other, learning about the other, learning what's motivating the other, learning about their grievances, understanding their pain, their humanity. And I want to add that compassion is not about trying to fix another person or to solve another person's problems. So I've been thinking about this sermon for a period of time, about the way we express compassion here in this congregation, between each other and with others in the wider community. The original idea that compassion requires giving up control was based on a couple of specific observations, one of which I'll mention here by way of example. Every Sunday morning, as you know, we host a pop-up restaurant here at our congregation to serve our neighbors from 10 a.m. till noon on Saturdays. Now, the vision of this event is a community restaurant experience that anyone from our congregation or anyone from the neighborhood would enjoy. We go all out. We have tablecloths and flowers, fresh flowers, and background music. And importantly, the food is served buffet style. For a small number of our guests, this is a rare experience. There are serving trays piled high with delicious sausage, scrambled eggs, and blueberry pancakes. Now, predictably, once in a while, one of our guests will help themselves to a dozen sausages at a time. Each and every one of the people who come out on Saturday to help us prepare this meal and to serve is a compassionate human being. But there's an almost unanimous reaction when this happens, when someone helps themselves to a whole bunch, usually it's sausages, but it could be pancakes. There's an almost unanimous reaction when this happens, a desire to correct the guest and to let them know that they should take 3 or 4 sausages at a time and come back when there's for more later if they want. The reaction among our volunteers is instinctive, and it's a product of our privileged experience in the world. After the rush of serving the meal is over, the volunteers often get to sit down and reflect on what's happened that day. And the question of people taking too much food at one time is not an infrequent topic. It's clearly a question of control. the need to ensure that there's always enough food ready to serve people waiting for their turn, the need to control the consumption of food, perhaps thinking that it'll keep down the costs of the program, or perhaps even the felt need to teach a lesson in etiquette. Well, these ideas were percolating in my mind for the sermon, and then I heard about a movie called Us and Them. It was going to be shown at the Big Mod Friendship Center on Thursday night. And I'm working on a subcommittee of our Social Responsibility Committee for our congregation's response to the Report on Truth and Reconciliation. I thought it would be helpful to view the movie for that reason, and so I attended the screening with two other members of this congregation. Well, that movie helped me to focus my thinking on the topic of compassion and control. Now, as I'm referring to the movie, it would help to show you a brief video clip that I took from the official trailer of the movie. So the trailer is fairly short, but I shortened it up a little bit more. And I invite you to watch.
I wanted to help the homeless. Along the way, I met four people. Who changed my life.
Someone had told me that any time in my life that I would have been homeless, I would have thought different things.
You have to imagine somebody that's been doing drugs for 50 years is not going to be normal tomorrow just because he wants to be.
I saw my blankets underneath that thing. Right there. Well, just make a bed right here and you just sleep right there. This is my home.
They would go on by me, look at me, and just keep walking. I felt I didn't exist.
Bodhisattva goes towards suffering to achieve enlightenment and doesn't run from it.
Light at the end of the tunnel is not only the dream, sometimes it's light.
Discussion with the producer. The film was shot over a 10-year period of time. So the documentary follows the relationship between the film's producer and four individuals over 10 years. At the start of the film, the four are chronically homeless and addicted. And it's important to speak their names. They were Stanley Hunter, Donelda Gauthier, Karen Mongrain, and Eddie Golko. The producer is Krista Lott. The producer's original vision for the film was to follow these individuals as they transitioned from homelessness, as they got into their own room in a public housing project, and hopefully on to improved quality of life. Part of the plan was to work with traditional and indigenous healing therapies, specifically using the medicine wheel as a focus, to help focus thinking and planning and to change behaviors. Krista worked hard at this for a couple of years, working with Stanley and Donelda and Karen and Eddie. But progress was disappointing. So she contacted an addictions expert, seeking help in the work she was doing with these individuals. And she was lucky enough to speak to a doctor, Gabor Maté, Hungarian-born Canadian physician who specializes in neurology, psychology, psychiatry, as well as the study and treatment of addiction. That name was familiar to me. I think I've seen him on CBC. I've certainly heard him on the radio. But I really need to investigate him more. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to include a clip where he was talking very briefly in that trailer. His voice was there. But I just want to share a picture with you. He's a fascinating person when you hear him speak and the depth of his ability to listen and to reflect is quite amazing, quite a powerful guy. He asked one question. He said, why are you doing this work? What compels you to try and fix the problems of other people? That began a process that opened Krista's eyes to the root of her own motivation. Her motivation in the losses that she had experienced in her own childhood. True compassion must start from an understanding of self. If your compassion doesn't include compassion for yourself, it's incomplete. Just as it is hard to get to know another person and their motivation, it can be harder to understand your own motivation without the help of a trained therapist. And even then, it can be years of work. This documentary film is depressing and heartwarming at the same time. In the course of the film, Stanley and Donelda both die. And at the end of the film, 10 years after she began this work, Karen and Eddie are still struggling with their addictions. But the film celebrates the relationships, the humor, the humanity, and the compassion shared by these five people, without the need to try and control the outcome. Life well lived is bittersweet. What do these two stories, the trivial problem of someone helping himself to too many sausages, and the 10-year saga of a filmmaker working with addiction and homeless individuals have in common? I want to go back for a moment to Karen Armstrong's words. Compassion impels us to work tirelessly to alleviate the suffering of our fellow creatures, to dethrone ourselves from the center of our world, and put the other there, and to honor the inviolable sanctity of every single human being, treating everyone without exception, with absolute justice, equity, and respect. Well, with all due respect to Karen Armstrong, I think the order might be wrong there. Compassion compels us to dethrone ourselves from the center and put the other there before we begin the work of alleviating suffering. Too often we go into these relationships with ourselves in the center, with ourselves trying to control the situation. Helping other people, fixing their problems is hard work, but it is harder work that requires real great humility to really attempt to put yourself in the position of that other person. The golden rule, which Karen Armstrong credits for the key to compassion, is commonly stated as, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. But it's not really that simple. We're called to do unto others what we would have them do unto us if we were in their exact same position, if we had had their exact same experience. And it's impossible to know another's exact position and experience. But compassion calls on us to begin to get to know the other as best we can, without judgment. And to make this work, the work of relationship, a priority over the need to fix the problem. To live with compassion, you must give up control. You must give up telling someone what to do, doing something for another that they could do for themselves. These things are all about placing yourself in a position of control. As Unitarian Universalists, we collectively affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person, just as they are. No one needs to conform to our standards of behavior to merit dignity and worth. To put others at the center, we must, as it says on the front of the order of service, starve our ego to feed our soul. When we're confronted by behavior that we don't like, we either try to change it or we run from it. Either way, we're trying to maintain control over that experience. Compassion calls on us to let go of that need to control and take a first step. As I wrote these last words for the sermon just last night, I realized that I might sound like I'm trying to control your behavior. And that would be kind of ironic. My hope is that you'll have a better understanding of my perspective on questions of compassion and control. And that may lead to an ongoing deepening of our relationship within this congregation. May it be so. Amen.